Today, the main focus will be DID use cases. We'll start with selecting a scribe. If that's something that interests you today, please go ahead and pipe up or prepare. We'll have introductions, reintroductions, announcements, and reminders. We're going to review progress and current action items. And then lastly, we'll end with the DID use cases. And I'm going to ask Joe Andrew to lead that section. He's been working on cleaning up our DID use cases, making them more focused. And he came up with a list of 15 features. It's a very interesting way to sort of reason about the different use cases we're proposing. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to tighten those up, get them ready to pass on to working group review. Let's get started with the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you have not agreed to the group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. Can everyone still hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, good. A lot of weird things. Okay, an IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you've not agreed to the group's IP policy, did I say that already?
Yep.
Okay, shit. But yeah, this is not my day. Okay, so let's move on.
Notes. You're doing a great job.
Keep going, Kim.
All right. So these meetings and audio recording of are archived at the URL I'm about to paste in. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. And so if you need those links, get them from the CCG community website. All attendees should type present plus, no space in between present and the plus, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type the letter Q plus, again, no space, to add yourself to the queue, and you can add an optional reminder, put a space after the Q plus, and then like to remind yourself.
And the word T-O, too. Oh. Q plus to talk about blah, blah, blah.
Oh, okay, we need to update our stuff. And if you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. Now we turn to our favorite part, scribe selection. Any volunteers today? Okay, let me pull up.
I have volunteered and scribe mixed myself already. This is Brent.
Oh, who is this?
This is Brent.
Thank you very much. You saved us a lot of time. Okay, let me just update real fast so that your contribution is acknowledged and you don't get asked again soon. Okay, so let's do introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call today that would like to introduce themselves?
I'm new. It's Will from Edinburgh. I've been on here before, but it's the first time I've managed to get onto the call properly. So, hello. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. I'm
welcome.
Welcome. Could you repeat?
Yeah, I used on SID. It worked, so that was good.
So you said you were having problems connecting in the past?
Yeah, I used a few things and I could just never connect in to the call, but now I saw the last time you tried on SIP and I managed to get in like halfway through, but now I'm in properly, so that's good.
Great. Can you tell us more about yourself?
I'm researching at in Edinburgh Napier, just like privacy preserving cryptography. And I was at the workshop in Seattle I should attend that. And I hope to be at the Rebooting the Web of Trust as well. So, yeah, I'm just interested to be involved and hear what's going on, really.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear.
let's see. So for reintroductions, let me just do a quick scan. Are you on voice? I don't think he is. Oh, it looks like it's time for Dan Burnett.
Dan's not on the call today.
Oh.
He had a conflict, unfortunately.
Okay, let me check. We have quite a few Dans next. Dan Pape, don't see him. Dan Buckner. Padwick. Dave Longley.
Sure, I'm here. Hi, my name is Dave Longley. I'm the CTO of Digital Bazaar. We played a major role in getting a lot of this work started, including this credentials community group some about 5 years ago, I guess. Our company focuses on blockchain technology, verifiable credentials technology, decentralized identifiers, things of that nature.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, let's move to announcements. First, we have Rebooting Web of Trust coming up in Barcelona. It is March 1st through 3rd. I'm going to include a link here. And so, register soon. Early bird discount, I guess, ended, but we still offer topic paper discounts. Immediately after that, there is a verifiable credentials working group face-to-face, and that's March 4th and 5th in Barcelona, Spain. You can get more information at this link. And Andrew, you're up.
Thanks, Kim. Yeah, so we've got 38 people signed up as of now. Please, if you're going to register, register soon. We need to have catering numbers all together by the end of next week. And we're encouraging people to continue to submit papers for development and discussion at the event. And the rwhat8.eventbrite.com is the link.
Joe, you're up.
I just wanted to mention schedule-wise about that. We are past the paper deadline, so if you haven't submitted a paper and you intend to, please get it in. We want to give folks a chance to read your paper before the event. And then also, the last day in the current set of pricing is the 22nd, and that's really because we have to finalize and get numbers to caterers and deal with last-minute things like that. So after the 22nd, it will be on-site pricing, which is a little bit higher to deal with that. So go buy your ticket.
And lastly, we have IIW. That's April 30th through May 2nd. That'll be in California. Information at this site. Okay, let's move to progress on action items. As you probably noticed, we've simplified the format to just the chairs work through and tag a set of issues beforehand. That is at this link that I sent. Okay, so I noticed that we have in Review Next updating ABNF for DIDs. I think we tagged that next because it's going to be the topic for today, but it's actually not. So Christopher or Joe, can you weigh in on that? Do we have anything discussed today?
Yeah, I hopped on the queue to do just that, and I'm looking at the PR. Dimitri just submitted a PR that folks should go ahead and take a look at on GitHub and give comments. I think there are still some outstanding issues, so I think next week we probably will be addressing a deep dive on that. But please take a look at that PR. We may pull it in before the conversation next week, just so we're working on the iteration of that thinking, assuming that thinking is at least an improvement. It would be great to put that in and then have the longer conversation rather than in probably too many debates about the PR itself.
Okay, and Dimitri, you're up.
Yeah, just wanted to echo that, that please take a look. There's a couple more sections that I'll be adding, but the general idea with this is to clarify some of the confusion and arguments that were around the difference between the did and then the did reference with the path and the query string and all of that. So that's it.
And I just noticed in the chat that my audio was dropping. It's possible it's operator error, so can you let me know if it's still happening? I'm trying to improve my talking into the mic. Okay, so your action item for everyone, review that PR. Next, we have LD key format registry administrivia. So we talked about this last week, but I think Manu's voice was I think none of the chairs were certain what we decided on this, so we decided to just review it again. I tagged Manu in it because basically whatever you say we should do next, Manu will do that. So if you want to just weigh in there, you can. Otherwise, just speak up now.
Yeah, I mean, I can weigh in there. I think what I was trying to say last week was we have a CryptoSuite registry that the community manages, and the key formats go in the specs in that registry. So I believe, anyway, I think we have a clear direction to go with that stuff, and I will try to type that up right now.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next we have address request for clarity and privacy claims of DIDs. That is this one. Okay, so the problem we had here was that the people that we wanted to assign it to or were requested that we assign it to were untaggable in GitHub. So let me just check to see if that's, oh, we can tag Lionel now. So let's see. Okay, so I can assign him at least, but yeah, so the issue here is to say we make the claim that DIDs reduce correlatability, but we haven't done much work to clarify, justify that statement. This is related to the next one that we'll talk about. And effectively, the action item was Lionel and Ryan were going to do some work on both of these. I'm going to check to see if anyone's on the queue to talk about status of that. Lionel, are you here? He is not. Ryan is also not here. That means we won't have any updates on the next one, which is look at security model or threat model of DIDs that was had some specific items that they wanted to address. We'll get to that next week. Lastly, JWK, was someone saying something?
Yeah, thanks for picking that up. I was just going to jump on the queue. Chris, could you send a ping to Ryan on those two issues?
I will.
That would be great.
Okay, the next one, JWK Crypto Suite specifications. Let me put that one in. So the idea here, a while back, and it says action items for UPort. Oh, right. So I took this action item from the CCG meeting, and the idea was that we wanted to get someone from UPort to
You fell off there, Kim.
Oh, man. Okay. So there's something with my connection. Let me try again. So create a spec that demonstrates how you express a JWK using the LD Crypto Suite. Create, I feel like this, some of this was done already through the verifiable credentials work there. Can anyone chime in on?
Sorry, I don't, my IRC is, I'll say a little bit, which is, I would really like the people that are pushing for the JWT support, both signing DID documents and also verifiable claims to you know, take it to the next level. I'm just not seeing, I mean, we keep on hearing debates, oh no, you have to be using JWTs, it's better. You know, here is, you know, all these variants of you know, JWTs that sign JSON-LD or et cetera. But I'm not seeing actual specs. I'm not seeing examples. In particular, I know UPort is doing this, and I would really like to see us take it to the next level with examples and whatever. I know that, you know, really focused on the JSON-LD side, but you've been working with the people on, you know, on a compromise in the verifiable claim side of things. I mean, what are we missing from the JWT people to take it to a spec level?
So, you know, the JOT stuff, the way that UPort has approached it is as a wrapper around rather than as a proof format. So one of the things that we've tried in the past is we've tried to express the linked data proof as a JWS, so using the Jose stack, and we switched to that for, I guess, the 2018 RSA signatures in the hope that that would, be picked up by them. It didn't. Instead, they took a verifiable credential and wrapped it in a JOT, and that's what the verifiable credential spec does right now. So you can use a JOT, and then they basically take the DID document or the verifiable credential, and they shove the whole thing into the JOT, and then, you know, Base64 encode, sign, and all that kind of stuff. So there is that. But it is a very different beast from the linked data proof stuff. So in the meantime, we've been working with Evernim and Sovereign to do linked data proofs around ZKPs, and it looks like there's a path forward there. We've been working with some of the Bitcoin folks to do Bitcoin-based signatures, same thing for the ED25519 ones. And then same thing for like proof of work, cuckoo cycle proof of work and things of that nature. So I at this point, the only company that we know of that, you know, has written spec text has decided to do it in a different way than most of the other organizations that we know. And as a result, I think it's kind of up to them to define how they want the same thing to look for DID documents.
Okay, thank you. And I'm back, and I noticed, will you let me know if it sounds better or worse? I tried voice the whatever, the landline or voice, whatever I'm trying to say, and it didn't work. So I'm switching back to OnSIP. And in any case, the top of the action item, that is sort of out of date. I noticed that Christopher has an updated comment on December 4th about, sort of what we need. So it does look like we do need some owners of this. In the time that I dropped off, did anyone have any proposals for who could drive the remaining work items? Are we looking for volunteers now?
Think we're
sorry, Kim, we lost you again.
Well, I heard that. I think we're looking for volunteers.
Okay.
So, you know, the Oliver's done a great job of at least engaging from Consensus Uport. I'm not volunteering him, but, you know, he might be the best person to make an attempt at how this stuff is done for DIDS.
Okay. So we'll, yes, we're looking for volunteers. Banging the drum on that one. And not hearing anything I'm saying, but Joe, could you the use cases part, including managing the queue, because I think I'm dropping too much and none of my connections are working.
Sure, I can take over for the use case part. So let me share the URLs. Here's the pretty printed, easy to read one, and the GitHub for issues and PRs is here. And I want to start by thanking Manu and Amy for taking what we had done previously in the collection of about 20 or some odd use cases in Google Docs, which had been linked from the DID charter, but was not really ready for release. They turned that into respec, and then I did an iteration on it over the weekend, and that's what we're talking today. So that was a bit of a surprise, but thanks for taking care of that, Manny. I want to introduce the document, and then I specifically want to spend some time going through these 15 features, because we really haven't had any conversation or consensus building around, are these the right 15 features? I'm sure the language I use in them can be improved, but I think also sort of the bigger issue is, you know, maybe there are 16 or maybe two of these are wrong and really not appropriate. So definitely looking forward to feedback on that. So the document itself, the core of it, is sort of at the end. This is these five use cases, four of which I really like, and there's another one I'd like to get in, based on Sam's contributions to the DID explainer. But that's not here yet. I'd really like to keep it to five, because I don't want this to be too burdensome for someone to consume and sort of get a sense of what we're talking about. So there are five use cases: the decentralized corporate identifiers for the enterprise, lifelong recipient managed credentials in education, prescriptions in healthcare, digital executor in law, and single sign-on in security. One of the things that we have learned or bumped into in the verifiable credentials use case work is the need to understand whether or not all of our use cases are suitably represented in the requirements and vice versa. So we don't have that list of requirements. So these 15 features are the first step at that. And I based it on our conversations that we had towards the end of the year about the unique selling proposition for DIDs, how people respond when we talk to them about DIDs, the feedback we got at TPAC, and then some of the work that Dan Burnett and I had done on preparing the DID explainer. So that's sort of the framing of the document. We start out with the feature benefit grid of these 15 features. And I identified five different benefits that those really fall into. Then we describe the features, and we have the coverage grid that demonstrates for each of those features which of our use cases actually specifically mention it. And some of them, I was a little generous on the explicit, but really I'd like it to be this is mentioned in the use case as a natural part of why it was written. I'm not trying to make sure that every use case hits all these features. Just if people are looking for an example of what do you mean by can't be administratively denied, which is feature two, then they could go look at either really anything except the educational one seems to mention that aspect of the DIDs. I think that's an old act for Manu. Is that right? Got it. Okay. Okay. So, before I go on, let me just check the queue. Does anyone have any questions, or we'll dive into those 15 there? Okay, Andrew, I'll get to that. in the sustainability? Yeah, let me go ahead and answer that now. So the notion on each of these benefits, I didn't write up what those benefits mean, except in context. That's a good point. So for anti-censorship, that means it can't be shut down by authorities who would prefer to shut it down, whether that's because you're a whistleblower or a terrorist or just a teenager. That's really not the issue. The point is there are situations where anti-censorship is desired. Anti-exploitation is about the system helping to prevent sort of surveillance capitalism kind of exploitation. Ease of use hopefully is fairly straightforward. Most of these do not help ease of use, which for many of you, that's probably not surprising. Privacy and for sustainability, I mean, does this feature help long-term, like generational long, you know, 30-plus year kind of sustainability? So if there's vendor lock-in, why does that have an X? Oh, yeah, no vendor lock-in, for example. So if you're tied to a single vendor and that vendor goes out of business, well, that's not very sustainable. And people have seen that with their wonderful AOL email addresses that they were so proud of, and now nobody uses AOL. Does that answer your question, Andrew? Okay, great. That's exactly what I want to trigger, is that kind of feedback about all this language is exceedingly new. So I would love to have improvements. Brett's dad is still on AOL. Okay. Sorry, Brett. I didn't mean to malign him. All right. And let me go to some queue management before we dive into those 15. My next plan is to read through those. So, and that'll give a little bit of the definition. So if your questions are about that, we will, we might be taking it on the next bit. But Justin R., you're up.
Hi. Thanks. So, I will preface this by saying that I'm not intimately familiar with the W3C style use case documents, but I will say that as an outsider coming in reading this document, it sounds like it's presenting things the wrong way around. It's giving me a bunch of solutions to problems that it doesn't really mention that I have. You brought this up a little bit, Joe, about, you know, sort of adding in requirements to this, and I think that that's actually going to be really important for people to not only understand this, but also to engage in it, because right now it feels like a set of solutions trying to find the problem that it fits, as opposed to my use cases are driven by a set of problems, and by the way, here are ideas for what those solutions should be.
Okay, that's good feedback. Next up is Manning.
Yeah, I just wanted to do some level setting because some people might not have seen the email exchange on the mailing list and might be wondering, like, why all of a sudden we're focusing on use cases. So the DIDS charter proposal went to advisory committee review as just kind of like a early heads up, but the next step is like formal review. And what happened is, you know, the charter, old charter, or the charter that was put to the AC had a link to our old use cases document, which was just a loose collection of like use cases the community had submitted. And what the AC expects to see at this stage is a respec document with use cases. Now, it's like there is no use case format at W3C. It's basically whatever the community or the group that created the use cases document comes up with. I do agree with Justin. So I really like the features and the feature coverage, and I think it's useful. I think the issue is leading with that. Again, makes it sound like, hey, you've got all of these problems, and I'm just kind of, and you know, the reader's like, I don't even know if I have those problems. So leading with a couple of, you know, I don't, I think we did a good job, and specifically, Joe, you did a good job in the verifiable credentials use cases document. We didn't get negative feedback there on that one. I'm wondering if we can take more of that sort of approach, understanding that DIDs are challenging to talk about. So we have multiple people now saying, like, yeah, you're giving me a bunch of use cases, but I have no idea how DIDs actually address those problems. So I'm wondering if, you know, our focal use cases need to focus more on, like, the set of features we have in the DID spec, because we did get to those through use cases, versus, like, higher level things like prescriptions and things of that nature. Like, really focus on the identifier and the, you know, key rotation and the service discovery and auditability, versus what people typically view a use case around, which is like, how does someone use it, you know, as they're walking down the street? Anyway, just some high-level feedback.
Okay, who's next in the queue? Mike Lauder.
Yeah, I just wanted to get on to say, you know, you're talking about censorship and use cases for that. One thing you could add to it is, in some countries, it's illegal to access certain types of data. Like, you could think of, you know, with GDPR, they might say you're not allowed to access this data outside of this specific country. It has to stay in here, and it, obviously, if I access it outside the country, that violates GDPR or whatever other laws they may have. So it might make sense for the DID to censor it based on where it's accessed from, and so that might be something you could consider, because censorship is not always a negative thing. It could be seen as a protective measure. Does that make sense?
Yes. I don't want to get into debating it, but that's an interesting idea. My quick take is it's probably at a different layer than DIDs.
Well, this could be part of the service layer. Right? Maybe a certain head represents a certain digital asset, and the controller doesn't want it accessed outside specific realms, and therefore the services could provide the censorship. It's just a stronger use case for censorship. Like, it's not always a bad thing.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Christopher?
Yeah, I mean, I have two comments. The, you know, one of which is that one of the benefits of this area is that there are certain cryptographic problems, whether or not it's selective disclosure or having multiple proof types, including timestamps or whatever, that, you know, haven't really been enabled or allowed people to future proof, you know, to the ability to rotate to new forms of keys or eventually quantum keys. And so that's all I got. Maybe the 16th benefit is there. But to the larger question that Manu raised, you know, I almost want to go in the opposite even further as far as reducing the use cases. I mean, to me, if you look at the value proposition of things that really couldn't be done before DIDs, I think that the educational long-term claims, like in the educational use case, where, you know, you can have these claims where the keys can change over time, the different parties can change, but the proofs and timestamps and things of that nature are such that somebody can say 30 years from now that they graduated from Harvard, even though we've all moved to quantum subsystems and you know, whatever else. I think that's a real benefit. And then I think the other one, you know, we talked about this at TPAC, was the travel one, which is the borders one. I mean, this is the one that seems to be really successful even with governments, which is that you have all these different parties that are claiming jurisdiction of different parts of travel, whether or not it's, you know, the thing, your place you're coming to, the place you're transiting between, and then you have, you know, somebody who's in a citizen of yet another government or another party. And then you also have these quasi-government borders where, you know, Scotland, Catalan, inside the EU changes. So you have all these different identifiers and they all kind of block each other in various ways. The DID allows you to be able to handle those in a much more graceful way, where instead you have the ultimate identifier, and then it's the various governments and other parties who offer what they need to do to get their job accomplished to protect travel safety or protect a child who might be improperly sent overseas without the permission of the mom, that kind of stuff. That comes off of the individual claims side of things, but a universal DID for that for those purposes. I don't know. I just, less is more. I mean, I respect the fact that a lot of those other use cases are interesting, and that the working group should be looking at those for purposes of shipping the final document 2 years from now. But for purposes of getting AC review, go with the things that are really successful to start. Lead with the things that are really successful now, that are driving adoption now, first. That's it.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. So before we get to the next on the queue, I wanted to note that one of the challenges with a lot of these use cases is they bleed over into really being about verifiable credentials. So one of the verifiable credentials focal use cases is the travel with child that you just talked about, Chris. And a lot of the use cases that people submitted really were hitting on the unique value propositions of verifiable credentials that are in your control, which can be enabled by a DID, but may not be the most obvious, oh, DIDs uniquely make that thing possible. So that's part of what we're striving for. We may have not hit the mark as well as we could have with these five, but the goal is to say, what do DIDs uniquely make possible? Because I think that's the question that the W3 membership is going to be considering. Johnny Crunch.
Yeah, so my issue isn't really about the use cases, and I'm a strong believer in the DIDs, but it really has to do with the charter itself and this transition from a community group into a working group. And I saw the experience, the same experience back with verifiable claims. And I struggle a little bit with, is DID specific to the W3 community or W3 action items or credo, because I think if it closes out into being a working group, it's really just members only with the possibility of invited experts. But there's so much of the DID happens to be in a decentralized random number generator that is really this idea of data democratization in self-sovereignty. So I worry that there's not going to be as much self-sovereignty when suddenly it's really just members only.
Interesting challenge. Yeah. Thanks, Johnny. Manu.
Yep. So I really, really want to address that, but I'm going to try not to until we have time at the end. I do think you raise a very good point. Johnson, so I think we should discuss what that looks like as the working group takes a form. But to focus on the use cases document, this is a minor thing. So I've noticed a lot of like anti this, anti that in the document, and I'm wondering we should try to change the language to be a bit more positive. So instead of anti-censorship, like resistant to censorship or privacy enhancing. Sustainability is great, right? So just across the board, let's try to be positive about it. Use cases documents are do play some sort of public relations role. The other thing I wanted to do was underscore what Christopher said, which kind of push back on some of the what I'm seeing happen. So I think when we talk about did use cases, we immediately go to the high level stuff, like travel and prescriptions and all that stuff. As Joe mentioned, those are very much verifiable credentials. Use cases where DIDs do play a very central role, like they are important. But the AC, the W3C Advisory Committee, is incredibly well-versed in focused charters. And what they're having a problem with, what they're having trouble with right now is that we're talking about things that are such high level that it's incredibly difficult for them to link how this new identifier enables those use cases. So I think we want to keep those high level things in there, right? But I think we need to have some kind of connective glue in the use cases document that can be put in there within like this week, not something that's going to appear in 6 months because the AC is reviewing it right now. And so there's a certain part of this where we have to kind of enable Joe to make rapid iterations on this document, because if he doesn't have the latitude to do that, then the use case document is not going to go over well with the advisory committee. So I think what I'm suggesting is that we really narrow down and focus on the use cases that DIDs and only DIDs enable. We can take these focal use cases that are in the specification in the use cases document, and we can put it towards the end. We can talk about here's some higher, these are the use cases that are enabled by DIDs, but the DID-specific use cases primarily have to do with, having an identifier that has keys associated with it that you can rotate, having an identifier that you can audit those key changes throughout history, having an identifier where you can do service discovery on that identifier, and that's really it, right? That's the core of what a DID and a DID document and the spec supposed to do. And I think if we just stick to those, three or four use cases, it will at least answer the question that the AC is asking, which is exactly what does a DID enable that other identifiers don't enable. I'm done.
Cool. Thanks. Drabiv.
Okay, hi. I wanted to draw attention to longevity of DIDs and to high-stakes cooperation. So I think these two things are the things that differentiate DIDs from other identities. And lifelong, long-term characteristic of the DIDs was already talked about. So I will just maybe talk a little bit more about high stakes cooperation. This is one of the, I think maybe even the key thing that is enabled by DID. So when we talk about money, about property, digital documents, and about digital governance, so democracy or corporate governance, I think these are key things that are enabled by DIDs and self-sovereign identities. And I think the use case for this high-stakes long-term cooperation should be added into the list of use cases. And I know this is quite futuristic use case about the United Humans idea, but as an example, it can be added. So I've written it in the Google Doc document. So this is my suggestion to add use case about this, about long-term and high-stakes cooperation.
Great. Let me respond to that directly. So one thing I would greatly improve that use case for us is if the description outlines specifically the actions that individuals take. I know you were working on it over the weekend, so maybe you've changed it since I last read it. But the description was still sort of big picture context, as opposed to Joe registers with X, or Joe creates a DID and then goes and creates a credential that gives him the right to vote, or, you know, and then when he goes to the voting day, he brings his hardware wallet, right? So the individual interactions that drive the experience would be useful to see in there. Okay, Adrian, you're next.
Okay, so I think that a very important reason to do the use cases is the business case for self-sovereign identity. And by that, I mean that the adoption model for self-sovereign identity has to answer the question, why will an issue? What does an issuer have to do about DIDs? What does a holder or a person that's going to have a wallet or seven wallets have to do about DIDs? And what does a verifier, what are we asking a verifier to do about DIDs? And if we focus the use cases on mechanistic things like rotation and service discovery and the DID document itself, the verifiable credential, sorry, formats themselves, then we're going to miss the business case, and that will be a bigger problem than the charter issue, in my opinion.
Cool. Thank you, Adrian. Okay. I put myself on the queue. This is a part to answer both what you just mentioned, Adrian, and what Manny had suggested earlier. So one of the things we have in the verifiable credentials use case document is, and I forget what we call them, but they're basically the mechanistic use cases of what a user should be able to do with these things. So not the high-level narrative, but you know, as people mentioned, create a DID, rotate a DID, revoke a DID, or use a DID in a verifiable credential, things like that. I think that's something I can put some time in this week, Manu, because I'm sensitive to your point. But I think that pattern that we had in the other document is pretty useful, where we had, you know, here's the problem domain and here's a solution domain. And what we don't have in here is solution domain stuff. I think that's a big gaping hole. Okay, no one else is on the queue. We only have about 5 minutes left. So we've got these 15 elements, 15 features as I call them, and I tried to break them down into, you know, what each of them seem to provide as key benefits. I'm keen, as you suggested, Manu, to find less negative terms, some more proactive positive terms for those. But I'm also very curious if I'm missing a 16th or a 17th, and are these really the benefits that these are focused on? Chris, I saw you hop on the queue.
Yes. Well, I'm sort of seeing – you know, when I hear some of the different other people talk, Manu's very interesting, you know, summary of key things that DIDs offer. I keep on coming back to kind of this future-proofing thing. I mean, every other example of an identifier in the past has real problems in, longevity, in, you know, whether or not the company is going to be still around or the, you know, the technology is going to be around, or maybe the keys changed. My PGP key expires
next month, and I can't find any good best practices on how in heck to properly rotate it. And so, you know, it's like starting all over again with a brand new identifier, despite having 20 years worth of history in some ways on PGP. And that's just not acceptable today. This whole idea of, you know, that we're enabling new forms of, you know, support and some future proofing and the longevity just feels to me like a really fundamental, one of the 15 points, not necessarily a use case for educational claims, which happens to take advantage of longevity. It feels like it is maybe an essential core value proposition. That's it.
Okay, cool. So I put myself on the queue to respond to that, actually, Chris. So we have rotation. We have the cryptographic future proof, and 10, 11, and 12 are also about future proofing on the organizational life, the deployment end of life, and your service provider. I'm actually not sure if 10 and 12 really are separate, but 12 was about the AOL email, whereas 10 is, it felt different when I wrote it up this weekend. But those are all attempts to capture some of that future proofing. And so if those...
But it's not called out future proofing. It's these individual things so people see they're not connected in some ways. Anyhow, That's it.
Okay, so that's hidden behind sustainability. So maybe you're suggesting that's a sixth benefit to distinguish from maybe economic sustainability is technological sustainability?
Yes.
Okay, that's really good. Okay. Johnny's question. So, that was in the other document. I'm not sure which one it was either, but it's not in this document. So that was where we had the scantily clad woman feedback, at least someone interpreted one of those use cases as being mildly inappropriate.
Yes, and sorry, to be clear, I deleted that because I was trying to stop the bleeding and contacted the person that put the image in there about that, and they were okay with it.
There was an image in there?
There was an image of a scantily clad dancing woman.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that is frustrating. However, I want to embrace that that's why we open it up. And when we open it up, we get crazy stuff. And, thank you, Manu, for cleaning that up and doing damage control on that. I wish we'd been able to sync up around deadlines and the ramification of that before it happened. But, hopefully we're feeling better about the current document. I'm glad it's already linked in the charter. We do have one last item, and this is for the charter itself. There is an issue 9 on the charter, which is the request to put in at least one use case in the charter itself. So it'd be great, Manu, if you could chime in on that. We're at 10 o'clock, but I'll just bring that issue to you. I'm happy with picking one of these five and putting them in, or you can make a case against embedding it. But there's been some back and forth to ask for that.
Let's take it offline and chat.
That sounds good. We got the issue in. So thank you all very much for that feedback. I will be making an iteration specifically in the short term on the task-based sort of mechanistic stuff because I think that will have the most relevance in the shortest amount of time. And this, you know, this is the beginning of this document. It's still got 2 years worth of work, but thank you all very much for your feedback.
Great, thanks all. Bye.
Cheers.